Hey, everybody. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I want to welcome you to today's webinar on retaining new hires. Hiring a candidate to become an employee is a big deal, but getting that new employee to stay is even a bigger deal. Employees are more willing to leave jobs than ever before and won't put up with as much as they have in the past. Keeping employees happy and turning new employees into experienced employees is key to saving money and maximizing productivity. So today in this webinar, which is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning, we've got a panel of experts here to share their insights and strategies into retaining new employees and avoiding situations where employees leave for lunch one day and just don't come back. As I mentioned, this webinar is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning. Peak Revenue Learning's knowledge source will help you take advantage of the spacing and testing effects. These concepts are proven to be among the most effective methods of learning improvement and knowledge retention. The focused iteration training capabilities of Knowledge Source will have a major impact on employee understanding and application of the skills required to collect more money and the laws and related policies and procedures staff members must be compliant with. You can learn more about them by visiting them online at peakrevenuelearning.com, or you can just click on the link I put on the chat to visit their website. And we're going to hear more from Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning a little later in our program. Let me tell you a little bit now about today's panelists. Tony Diaz has been in the collection industry for more than 13 years. He's currently the manager of training and development at PFC USA. He's responsible for overseeing the entire training program and development of reps for first and third party collections. With a teaching background, training and development falls right in line with helping reps achieve their full potential. Tony holds numerous designations from ACA International. Judy Gray is the Chief Human Resources Officer for State, overseeing the Human Resources team. She joined State in 2014, bringing 20 years of experience. She's responsible for all facets of human resources, including recruitment and retention, performance management, benefits, personnel-related policies and procedures, as well as team member communication and internal events. Since joining State, Judy has led the HR team through tremendous growth, employing innovative recruiting and employee engagement practices to attract the highest quality employees in one of the tightest labor markets in recent history. She's also instrumental in partnering with all levels of leadership to maintain the company's family culture, which is increasingly becoming its competitive advantage in meeting the needs of its clients and their patients. James Taylor has been in the collection industry for 9 years, working with accounts recovery and debt settlement companies. He currently oversees human resources, training and development, and assists with corporate strategy and in conjunction with RGS Financial's operation department. James holds certifications from SHRM, the Society for Human Resources Management, and has an MBA in human resources. Our format for today is going to be a panel discussion. This, of course, means that questions and comments from those of you watching us live are encouraged. If you see something and have a question, or if you have a comment that you want to share, there's a couple of different ways you can do it. You can drop it in the chat, which is that little chat bubble on the right-hand side of your screen. The event tab is a public chat that everybody who is connected can see and read. There's a private tab next to that you can send private messages. A couple icons below that is a question mark. That's the Q&A for today's event. You can also submit questions or comments that way. The benefit of doing that, going the Q&A route, is there's an anonymous button that you can push, and anything that you send to us is sent anonymously. So if you're embarrassed or ashamed or don't want to have your name or associated with something you're sending to us but want us to get us to talk about it, click the Q&A button, click that anonymous button, and anything that you send to us will be sent anonymously. With that, let's jump into our conversation. So the first thing I want to ask the panel is, what do you think are the primary reasons why new employees are leaving their positions at collection operations? Tony, I'm going to pick on you to go first, if you don't mind. Sorry, can't hear you, buddy. Nope. Sorry, that's okay. While we get that figured out, Judy, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons, but really the first reason why employees leave us in the early days is they're still in the labor market and they're still getting calls from recruiters and something better comes along. I mean, it's quite that simple early on.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things I experience when I'm hiring on this side is you'll have people that come in and then they're still running off the floor, right, to take a break real fast. You see that they're on their phone, and the whole time I'm like, that's probably what it is. So it's that, and sometimes it's our engagement with them, you know, letting them see where they fit into the puzzle and you know, what they actually bring to the table and what we're hoping to get out of them. A lot of them don't see that future. So I feel like sometimes they don't have that clear path of where I'm going to go from here. You know, am I just going to be a phone rep forever type of scenario?
Right. We see a lot of that too, James. And, you know, those early days, we're basically a remote company. We have few folks that actually go into a physical office. And so forming that connection in day one, day two, all the way through day 10 becomes real critical to making sure that they feel part of the family. And so we've had to redo our new hire orientation so that it's welcoming, so that it's fun, so that there's no chaos, so that they don't take that call on their break.
Let's check again with Tony. Can we hear you now? No, but now you're muted. It says still nothing. Shoot. All right, I'll circle back and I'll work with you on that. Just keep an eye on your messages, Tony. Judy, a follow-up question for you. Is it just that, you know, if they're still in the labor market, does that mean there's just no more loyalty? There's no loyalty anymore that employees have to companies that maybe they used to have in the past? Or is it that they're just always sort of, you know, thinking the grass is going to be greener somewhere else now?
You know, I think it's a combination of both. I hate to make a global statement that our labor force isn't loyal anymore, but I think there's a piece of it. You know, there are demographic age groups where they expect certain things from life and they expect certain things from work, and loyalty may not be at the top of their list, but it is a soft, very tight labor market. And a dollar an hour more means a lot to somebody who doesn't know us yet. And it's easy to find another job. You just have to click on Indeed and click on another job, and you'll likely get a call from a recruiter. So it's kind of a combination of both. And so the job of the HR professional and the training professional is to really understand that and find a way to talk to them and reach these new hires that engages them right away. And sometimes that's fun.
Let's see. Can you hear me? Oh.
Yay.
Oh, sound. Awesome sound. That's nice. Yeah, celebration. But I think, Judy, you're right. I think this day and age in the remote environment that you're just so easily accessible to so many more jobs now. And you can be living in Colorado and go to somewhere else that has a higher wage. So a lot of our phone reps are just looking at the hourly wages. I know we have commissions and bonuses and those types of things, but that's not what they see. They don't see the ultimate end goal of what you can make, but they just want the highest dollar they can make at doing the bare minimum. And unfortunately, you got to have some kind of incentives for them to perform. So it really does make it hard in this remote environment. But like you said, there's different strategies that we have to put forward and a little more effort. And again, it does give you the ability to get better candidates as well, because your branch is a little further than normal, but it's a change. It's a work in progress. And we're still new to the game, but the pandemic has forced us into that here at PFC, but we've adjusted. And like I said, we're in about a dozen or so states now, rather than being fully in-house and local talent. So it's good and bad, and it's definitely something to work with, and it'll be evolving as we continue to go.
The impact that this new dynamic is having, where employees are more willing to leave and turnover seems to be higher than it's ever been. James, maybe you can sort of talk about, you know, the long-term implications and costs that are associated with this, and the effects that something like that can have on morale and culture inside a collection operation.
Well, definitely. When you're sitting there and just from the HR perspective, right, like I spend the majority of my time recruiting. I'm digging through the resumes. I'm picking the people that I feel they have the skill set. I'm spending that time to then sell them on the job, right? Because that's part of it. I'm trying to make those connections, tell them the benefits of coming to work for us and what we can do for their career. So there's a lot of not just money and dollars that are tied to that from my salary, the IT perspective and everything else, but there's also there's emotional component into it. There's energy that's and time that's spent there. You get them through training and then they just leave, right? Again, you've had all that time, all the people that have come on board to help them get to that point, and you do start to sit there and go, is it me? Am I the problem? Like, what am I doing? What are we doing wrong here? And, you know, from other people that are here that maybe have been here for a while, your long-termers that have stayed and ridden the wave, they start to question, like, oh, well, maybe I should even be looking somewhere else, right? Like, I'm making decent money here, but can I go make that somewhere else? Because obviously we're having a hard time retaining people. And collections is a hard job. Like, let's not discount that at all. It's a skill set. It's an art that you have to develop over time. So I think part of the problem that I run into here is getting people in the door, selling them that this is a good place to work, that they can build a career, and that this skill set doesn't come naturally to most people. And it's not an easy one. And it's going to take time. And, you know, going back to what Judy was saying and Tony, you know, that time component, everyone wants it today. They want to come in, you know, be a top collector and make the biggest bonuses and commissions and walk out the door within a week. And that's just not realistic for the industry. So I think working on training and development, shortening that time frame, trying to get them on the phone as quick as possible to where they are collecting and they see that, and then coming in and doing smaller subsequent trainings to help them along the way and just make them better. And that way they can start to see, because usually once you get that first big commission check, that's usually when you start to see that light bulb turn on. They're like, oh, I can make money. I can do this.
Yeah, I think some of the implications that we have on the training side and when you get them to the floor is that you spend a lot of resources shadowing, mentoring. You got other reps that you're taking off the phone that you're slowing down. You want to show them your best foot forward, so you put them with your better representatives, and then that ties them up. So now instead of one person, you got two people. So you truly don't get a lot of your return on these new hires till, like James said, they're on the floor making money and hitting their incentives, and everyone's winning at that time. But it does take time for them to get there. So we really do focus on a lot of that low-hanging KPIs or the low-hanging kind of bonuses that they can achieve, whether it's a speech analytics or your attempts or some kind of efficiencies that you're grading or scoring on. It's like you said, you just got to give them a sample of what they can additionally earn. And once they get that small sample and they start to feed in their checks, I think that's what starts to drive them. But to get them there, it really is a struggle to get them past that point, because as soon as they get that first phone call, it's a lot different than it is in the classroom, the role playing, the simulation. So it's almost like a reality check at that point. Can I do it? Am I going to give the effort to go on? Or at this point, am I just cutting ties and looking for a new job and biding my time till that new job comes and gets me on LinkedIn or that recruiter finds me and those types of things?
Yeah, I think money is important. It certainly is important. I mean, it's important to all of us, right? In recognizing that. But the connection, in my mind, seems to be the first thing, because the money doesn't come in for a few weeks at a minimum. So it's the connection. It's meeting with these new hires. It's having predictable check-in points in those first, let's say, first 6 weeks where they feel part of the state family. Our culture is very strong in the family culture, and we speak about it. We live it. That's our truth. And so we meet with these folks right from day one. I'm part of new hire orientation. We've overhauled our new hire orientation so that the senior most leaders of the organization actually come right into the meeting and meet with our new hires and tell them our state stories, our funny stories, our heartwarming stories. And they get a chance to meet us. We know them. We take notes of who they are so that when we talk to them again in 3 or 4 weeks, we can say, you know, how's that baby coming? I know you just had a new grand little. How's that baby doing? That stuff means a lot. Calling people by their first name, recognizing who they are. And that's not easy when you have 700 employees. But it is a goal. It's a goal of mutual respect. It's a goal of checking in with folks. We have a very predictable check-in process where we meet with our new hires at 3 weeks. We meet with our new hires at 5 weeks. A scheduled 15-minute meeting where we say, how is the technology? Are you able to get in easy in the morning? Are you able to look at your time card so that you know that it's right? Are you able to understand what's going on? Have you met with your supervisor? Have you met with your assist mentor? So we ask those questions, and then we give them feedback. We say, if they haven't met with their supervisor, which thankfully that doesn't happen very often, but we get a note right off to the supervisor and say, hey, Sally tells us she hasn't met with you. Could you get on her calendar? So we follow up with those folks. It's the follow-up.
Yeah, I think that's a great point that we also include our senior leadership like in a meet and greet with each new hire class that comes in the door. But we've also wanted to build relationships with our supervisors. So we include them in the new hire training. They have a specific topic that they feel comfortable training or going over. It doesn't be anything in detail. It's just to see those faces that you're going to see when you leave training. They build such a relationship with the trained staff, and you see them for 8 hours, 4 hours, whatever it is before they go shadow and they're on their own, but they don't get that relationship with a supervisor. And you want to feel that comfort level once you leave training to be with that supervisor. So we've seen some pretty impactful things about including supervisors in new hire training to build those relationships, especially in this day and age in the remote environment. You can't walk down the aisle every day to say, how you doing today? How's your training class going? And those types of things. So in these Zooms or Teams meetings, wherever you're doing, you have those supervisors partaking in those trainings to build that relationship from day one, and then it just helps that transition once they move from the training to the floor. You've already built that first layer of conversation. You know a little about them, their day-to-days, and it just makes it easier when they have a question, they have a concern. They can come to you without second-guessing or let me just guess. And we know in our industry, you never want to guess. You never want to speculate on what the response is going to be. So let's get you the right answer, and you can feel comfortable getting it from your supervisor.
Yeah, that connection really does matter. We also engage in very rigorous screening at the recruiting stage, because what we were finding early on is folks that join us remotely didn't truly understand the job. They didn't understand, you know, the nature of you really are on the phone all day except for breaks. You are working with patients. You are, you know, healthcare is challenging. There's a lot to it. It's very rewarding, but it's also very challenging. And so we're very rigorous in our screening process, where we share with candidates exactly what the job is and allow them to ask questions. We're working on different types of videos that's, you know, a day in the life, so that candidates can look at it between interview one and interview two, to really understand what we do and how we do it and how rewarding it can be. So, you know, we screen out or screen in, let's say that. We screen in folks at the very earliest stages so that when they join us, they're not left wondering, I didn't think the job was going to be this way.
Right. One of the things that I see when I am interviewing people, and this goes to what Judy's saying, is I don't think they notice, right? They clicked the quick apply button and they move on. And just a simple question, what interested you in RGS Financial? And then they're like, who? they don't really know what they applied for. And you're going, okay, did you read the description and stuff like that? So it is interesting to see, because then you'll have other people that come in and they start telling you about the company, who runs the company. You can tell they did some research. They didn't just go to our website. They dug a little bit. So it just lets you see the interest level from there and kind of where we expect to see them in the future.
Yeah,
I think that's important, the job knowledge of what they'll be doing. We try to hit them at every level, like I said, the screening, the interview. You bring them on day one, you give them as much exposure to it immediately. And it's still surprising that once they get out of training and they actually hit the floor, they're like, wait, this is what I'm going to be doing all day? It's like, we spent weeks on this already. And yeah, and you just try to expose them to as much as they can with role-playing, calls, simulating, and just give them what it is so that way they know and they're prepared. And like you said, it is very rewarding. You just got to get to that point. And just like any, there's a learning curve to it, and just letting them know, comfortable, you're going to make mistakes, you're going to get there. We're just going to be behind you. And those check-ins are really crucial too. We have like a 30-60-90. We get We have it coming from HR. We have it from the training team supervisor. So we give them different facets of comfort and assistance whenever they do need that.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing that even though we do all of this recruiting and really, you know, very, very rigorous selection process, we will still have folks on week four saying, I didn't think the job was going to be this way. It's always a head scratcher.
We've got a question on that, which I'm going to ask in a second. But first, before we get into that, I'm going to invite Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning, the sponsor of today's webinar, to say a few words. Chris.
Thanks, Mike. Hello, everyone. I'm Christopher Rickman. I'm the president of Peak Revenue Learning. Have you ever heard of the forgetting curve? If you haven't, I'm pretty sure that you've seen the results in your organization. Forgetting curve is a well-known phenomenon that well-researched, well-known. It describes the rapid dramatic deterioration of retained knowledge after learning events, whether that is new hire or other types of training. And virtually all of your people experience this. That's whether they're new or even seasoned team members. And the results are concerning. Mistakes, complaints, dissatisfaction, missed revenue, rework, greater turnover. And of course, this leads to increased regulatory, financial, contractual, and reputational risk. The good news is that you can do something about it. You can do so with spaced, repetitive micro learning. Our application knowledge source will turn the forgetting curve into deeper learning. You can help your team to learn more rapidly and retain what they need to know, empower them with the knowledge that they need to thrive in your organization. Knowledge Source will help you increase quality, decrease risk, grow revenue, lower cost, and help reduce turnover. To find out more about us, please visit us at peakrevenuelearning.com or give me a call. I'm at 803-521-0031. We're here to help make your job easier and both you and your company more successful. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. That number again, was it 803-521-0031?
That is correct.
All right. I just put that in the chat. So that's in there for everybody. If you want to give Chris a call, I encourage you to do so. Again, Peak Revenue Learning is the website. Chris, thank you for sponsoring today's webinar. All right. We got a comment and a question that came into the chat. So earlier when we were talking about sort of meeting the needs, someone posted meeting their psychological needs is as important as meeting their physiological needs, meaning a paycheck. So that's out there if anyone wants to comment on that. But then we also had a question, and the question is, what do you think of the idea of making a tour or observation of the collection floor a part of the interview process?
Well, we're remote, so that would be hard to do.
But maybe there's a video you could play or something to sort of show them?
Yeah, so we are starting to use videos, YouTube videos. For example, our chief IT person did a YouTube video. So we ship equipment to our new hires. We provide them with everything they need to be successful, the screens, the computer, the headset, the mouse, all that stuff. And so they get this beautiful box 3 or 4 days before they start. And that's exciting. You know, we put this box together. And so now they have a YouTube video instead of just, they have a printed instruction how to set it all up. Now they have a YouTube video where they can click onto that YouTube video and it'll show them exactly how to set up their computer. So that's been very successful. And then the next step is to start to use video in our recruiting process. Like I said, so we interview, we do a first HR interview where we go in depth about what the job is, we review their resume, we find out what their needs are for a job so that both parties, us and the candidate, can determine if this job is a good fit. Once we determine that it's a good fit and the candidate wants to proceed, they will have another interview scheduled with a leader on the production side, either a supervisor or a manager. And in between those two interviews, our goal is to have a video set up so that they can see what it's like to do the job, so that they can understand our culture. they can understand what it's like to work here. And those things can be given to that candidate to prepare for that second interview.
So with RGS, I don't have a video that we would show like our collections for. I know we've had some in the past where we've done some things like that. I like the idea. We work a hybrid environment, so we do have part of our staff here in the office a few days each week, and you know the rest are working remotely. So I do think that it's important because you can show that, because that's really where they have fun, and it's easier to develop that culture, get to know your coworkers and everybody else. In senior leadership, right? Like when the employees are in the office, that's when we all need to be there, because at the end of the day, that might be the only time you have FaceTime with them, and to have those connections to where they feel comfortable reaching out, and back to that mental health component and worrying about that, they need to know that there are people that they can come and talk to outside of their supervisors. You know, I sometimes it might be how they're dealing with their supervisor or the communication with their supervisor that they may be having difficulty with. And knowing that you can not just come to HR, maybe it's the vice president of compliance, maybe it's another manager or somebody that you connect with and you're like, I feel this person understands me and can help me communicate more effectively. Our EAP program is 100% free for our agents. So that's tied in with a provided benefit. So that's something that our agents have access to as well, just to kind of talk about life stresses and things like that, that maybe they don't feel comfortable sharing, or quite frankly, I may not be qualified to give them advice in those areas or help them. So I like to use that as well to give them an outside source that you can't be judged. And, you know, it's a source that you can utilize as much as you'd like.
Yeah, we have like a production video that our marketing team has put together that kind of advertises what we stand for, what we do, and who we are as a company, but also provides insight into the jobs that they're doing. So the combination of that, but I welcome anyone, obviously, to walk our floors. We just have to be careful with all the laws and regulations of what they hear, what they say, especially not being an employee at that time. So those are the cautions that you want to make sure, whether it's computer that they're visible to, documentation, all those types of things. But anything that intrigues them, that we're all open for. We want that employee to be excited for their first day, like you said, whether it's receiving that care package of the computers or just a welcoming gift from PFC, anything like that. Well, so we opened all our doors to them, and we try to give them as much as information and make them feel comfortable. Some people just want a job and they'll do whatever they need to say on the interview day, but then 2 weeks into it, it's a whole different story. So you get those situations as well. So it's good and the bad.
One of the other things that we found really very successful, and again, it's our family culture. We try to bring the whole family into the fun. So for example, for Halloween, our marketing group is sending Halloween surprises to all of our littles and grand littles. All the employee has to do is register, give us the name of their little or their grand little, and we send them a little Halloween surprise so that little gets something right in their name in the mail. And it's so much fun. And our employees, they'll take pictures of their littles, opening it up and enjoying it. And so we post those pictures. A couple of years ago, we did an ice cream treat where we shipped all kinds of stuff for folks to make ice cream sundaes. We didn't send the ice cream. We sent a coupon so they could buy some ice cream. And we had all kinds of pictures of all of our littles opening up our ice cream packet. We have a virtual Santa visit every year. So our employees can sign up their littles and their grand littles to have a virtual one-on-one virtual visit with Santa Claus. Our marketing group records it, and we send our employees a CD of that record. And not only is Santa there, but Santa's elf is there. And guess who the elf is? This girl right here. So we have a lot of fun with the families.
Okay, let's see here. Another question. Do you have issues with employees that do not start or do not finish training returning the equipment? Or how do you ensure it's returned?
We have a very exhaustive 10-point process where we, first of all, when our employee joins us remotely, they have to sign an agreement, and they understand with their signature that equipment must be returned. If it's not returned, we will call the police. So there's lots of different touch points, but if it still hasn't been returned in a certain amount of time, we'll call the police, and the police will reach out to them in almost every jurisdiction. We get back 80% of our equipment. That means 20% we don't get back, but we get back 80%.
For those with remote or hybrid workforces, do you find less productivity towards their work or overall lack of engagement compared to employees in the office?
We've done studies on our side, and it's kind of funny because some of them flip-flop. So some people are actually more productive in the office and less productive at home because they have more distractions. It's easier to go grab a load of laundry and all the other things that can come up. But we also have employees that's the complete opposite. They're actually more distracted when they're in the office. It was eye-opening because the people who you thought wouldn't be distracted in the office, they actually are. They're talking to their neighbors more, and then when they're at home, they stay focused. So productivity-wise, when we were running like the total numbers across, we were seeing that it's about the same. We're either just as productive or maybe a little bit more at home on most of the time slots that we were looking at. It's just the individuals kind of flip-flop inside of our numbers.
Yeah, we usually see some of our in-house are a little more productive just because they have the ability to ask the questions to the supervisors, who most of them are here, and they have most of the staff of their cohorts, and or some of our mentors are here in-house. So they're available obviously by Teams or email, but it does take a little longer to get that response. So in that meantime, they're just waiting around, waiting for that answer. And typically if you're here in-house, you can put them on a hold, talk over your cubicle, walk down the aisle to your supervisor. So we've seen, and we do like the fact, and obviously company culture is a little bit easier to push on your employees in-house. But there are, like you said, you have those outliers. You see some of them that are really productive at home. They're on the phone 8 hours. They don't even want to take their breaks until you force them to do so. But overall, Typically we see our best, and typically the newer hires succeed more when they're in-house with us.
I think it's hard for us to measure because 91% of our employees are remote. So if you compare today the employees that are in the office with the employees that are remote, it's not a fair comparison. But what we do know, and it may be anecdotal, the way it used to be when everybody was in the office 4 years ago versus the way it is now, when everybody was in the office, we were more productive.
And one of the things we've done to kind of solve for that in some ways is we use a meeting room. It's a calibration room that they all employees are on. And so their cameras are live the entire time they're working. And that AI software that's built into that will detect facial expressions and things like that. So if they look disengaged, if I'm not looking at my camera and I'm doing this, it starts to track that. And it gives us metrics to say, are they engaged? Are they distracted? Because it can tell the difference between me looking straight on at the camera or looking over because I'm watching Netflix on TV, right? It can determine those things. And it also has some security features that are built into that to know that there's no one else in the room. So that way we're staying compliant and, you know, we're not having anyone look at things that they shouldn't. And if their cell phone's out, it would pick this up as well. So that also kind of gives us a gauge so we know that our employees are staying focused and that they're at their desk, they are working. Outside of just using numbers from our phone systems and things like that.
We're on collaboration AI as well, James.
Perfect. I love it.
I mean, I like it too, because it gives me, my HR heart, a comfort level that our employees aren't doing something that's risky. Mm-hmm. We've had to really position it as a resource rather than a big brother, because it's not intended to be a big brother. It's intended to be a resource. It's intended to not make our employees feel alone in their home office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And from that, we could stay engaged from a training perspective. Everyone's there, and it's right. A quicker response having a manager right there face to face, being able to give you feedback or help you with an account, see your screen, what you're actually getting stuck on. Because sometimes you may not be able to articulate that as well. And it's so much better than a chat box or even sometimes a phone call where it feels cold. This is a little bit more live and in person.
Yeah.
It's not the same as being in the office, but it's close. No.
It's not. It's such a challenge to try to mirror and mimic that feeling. And I've come to the conclusion that we can come close, but we can't meet it. So we have to find other ways to make that work feel good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Other questions here. How long is the average new hire training before they're allowed to get on the phone? I'm going to amend that question slightly because one of the things I wanted to talk about is, Judy, we've done webinars where you've talked about how you've tried to accelerate the hiring process to get people hired as quickly as possible before they find other jobs. And James, you were talking about trying to accelerate the training process to get people on the phones as quickly as possible. So I'm just curious if the objective is sort of like to try and compress both of those as fast as possible. And what do you think would sort of be an ideal time frame from, you know, application to, you know, when someone would be able to get on the phone and start collecting?
So we have extended our training. We have a full 2 weeks of in-class training where it's really the technical training. And then they graduate out of in-class training and they're in a protected environment with a trainer where they're working most of the time, but some of the time they're very protected and learning, continuing to learn and building their confidence. So we've really extended it and we're testing it. And so far our numbers are showing that it is quite successful, that it is helpful in retaining. And when folks do get out of that protected environment, they're not as scared and they're really ready to work independently.
Yeah, I believe we're in the same boat as Judy. We like the 2 week classroom training where it's not 8 hours of just nonstop training, but you go anywhere 4 to 6, depending on how the class feels. You obviously get a gauge of how they're taking it in. And if they're falling asleep on you, dozing off, then you change it up and give them some application of either they start shadowing, experiencing that. But really the 2 weeks of classroom knowledge base, whether it's application, laws, regulation. But that third week is that transition from all training room to either mentoring with being with the mentor where you do the navigation and they do the talking, or you're doing the talking and someone helps you with the navigation piece. And then you do a combination with the mentor. It just builds so much more confidence for a new hire than just, all right, training, out the door you go and hopefully you make it. Like, we want to ease that burden as much as we can for that new hire. So we like that third week to be that cushion time for them. Like, we're going to get you with a representative that's in your ear that can give you those answers on the spot. Obviously, they work with that mentor. Like, hey, if I'm pausing for more than 5 seconds, that's when I need you to fill in, because we don't want them over talking on that small gap. So there's definitely some collaboration with the mentor and the new hire. But we've seen success in that mentorship where they allow the shadowing of a new hire. They're in their ear, giving them the answers if they're not available. So we do like that soft rollout to the phones, I guess you could call it.
Since we're working in that still in the office and doing the more of a hybrid schedule, we're looking at about a week's worth of what I would consider your compliance and your systems trainings and things like that, usually around a week. And then outside of that, the following week becomes more client-specific details. So they're learning specifically what they need to do on certain clients and the clients that they're going to be working on. And that's handled by our senior operations manager and our operations team to really make sure not only are they getting FaceTime with the people they report to, but if they're learning the specifics of that job. So they kind of move into that nesting period where they're working with someone, they have someone that's listening to their calls. They may take a few calls, then get pulled off. Let's go listen to the calls. And a lot of times it's self-identification, right? Like getting them to the point where it's like, I should have said this, or I could have done this, or I see where I messed up here. So they're really understanding the mechanics behind it. And then that nesting period is different for different individuals. I hate to say it's a specific amount of time because some people, it takes them a little bit longer to catch on and get everything down. But they work closely with their managers during that time, because once we graduate out of that nesting period, that's when they're authorized to work remotely. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, it's in their manager's best interest to get them up to speed as fast as possible so that they can also be not in the office 5 days a week. But on that flip side, that employee has an incentive there. There is something. So we try to move people through at different paces once we hit that point.
Let's see here. Tons of questions coming in. Let's see. Has the attrition rate been higher for remote or hybrid employees versus those in the office?
We just don't have a comparison. I mean, it's a very different world, and the vast majority of our employees are remote. We are starting to hire hybrid folks in one of our locations, which is our biggest office. And it's so early now, but I'm not seeing any difference in attrition rates with the folks who were hired to be remote, the folks that we've hired to be hybrid, even though we pay them more to be hybrid, they get $1 an hour more to be a hybrid employee. We're still seeing the same amount of turnover. It's early though.
Yeah, we're in the same boat. Even though we have people in-house and remote, like you said, it just really on that individual. You try to, HR does their darndest to do screen them and get what they think is ideal and different personalities. And we've seen this work, that work. It really just, if that new hire wants to make the effort or give us the effort, that we're willing to help them out and give them the tools to succeed. They just got to give us a little to help out themselves.
Mm-hmm.
What is more attractive to new hire candidates, a commission structure or a higher base salary?
Hot topic.
just opinion just quick off the top of my head. I think you look at those people that are looking at the hourly rate more than they look at the attention, and that's what catches their eye on an application. Yeah. Oh, this job only does 15, but they don't look at the bonuses, or this one's already at 20 and they have minimal bonus opportunities. So in the end, I'm assuming they're probably in the same ballpark figure, but it's just, what do I have to do to get that extra money? If it's easier just to be given at an hourly rate, they'll probably take that job. We're just looking at from the high level of things. So my guess would be that they're looking at the hourly rate compared to what their potential bonus or opportunity to make that is.
Yeah, from an attraction perspective, it's the higher base mm-hmm. in our world.
Yeah, my ops team and I go back and forth on this a lot, just because, you know, when you are posting those jobs out there and you're seeing, you know, Chick-fil-A is hiring at the same price that I am, and they just have to stand there and take an order and throw a chicken sandwich in a bag. It's not that easy. I'm not discounting Chick-fil-A employees, but compared to a collections on the phone and collecting that money and that salesmanship that comes with it, you're going to put a lot more mental capacity into that. And it's not an easy sale sometimes. So when I look at it, being in the Dallas market has been interesting over the last few years, pandemic-wise, the job market, the competitiveness that's out there, the cost of housing, rent, and everything has just skyrocketed in this area. And it's difficult to stay competitive. Whereas before, what we were paying is, you know, that was great. It was good money. You could afford your basics on this. And then now you're sitting here going, well, to really get to where someone can afford their basics, or do we need to pay a little bit more? Or does that mean that our employees are coming from further out where the cost of living is a little bit cheaper versus being here closer to the city center? So it is something that we're still trying to balance out. So it's an ongoing conversation.
Someone asked, is training incentivized the same as their day-to-day work once they're on the floor?
Not really. It's a base wage across the board. It's the same base wage in training and the same base wage when they're actually working independently on the floor.
Right.
In our world.
Really not an opportunity to earn commissions while you're in training.
Right.
So what we did with ours is we start them, if they have no collections experience, they start at a lower amount. And then we've done a tiered bonus structure where there's smaller payouts incrementally. So their first $3,000 in fee collected, their first whatever, you know, it tiers up. And the whole idea is to get them where they need to where they'd be maxing out their bonus and what they need to make their desk and cover their desk. And to do that, once they start hitting that, their hourly wage goes up. And then they're hitting that minimum amount that we really want to collect on. And then that's when they see the bigger bonuses and commissions. So we try to create and been testing that ramp up period. And that's what we've been doing probably for the last year and a half. And it seems to be working well with giving them those little incentives so they can move up and have some wins. I think that's really what it is. You need that win and that success under your belt. Mm-hmm. And you still start feeling more confident. I can really do this job.
Someone asked, have any of you tried gamification to help retaining employees?
We have.
We're newer to the gamification world, and it really has been a big hit. We've recently got on board with Zizzo, and they're really made a change to the floor. I mean, we've had a dashboard that kind of gives you the statistics on where you kind of stand, but this is 10 times better than what we could have imagined. And then not only that, but just the engagement of your new hires into it, whether it's creating their avatar, competing against one another. I think it just some of the younger generation that we have in the office and the gaming world in general has really taken off. And even with older people too, it really doesn't have an age to it. They really just enjoy it. That competitive nature. Obviously, we know competitive people in the collection industry are really great because they strive to hit the goals. So, and you can just imagine that magnified in the gamification where you can challenge your buddy over there. Well, I'm going to make more calls than you today, or I'm going to collect more dollars. And then not only challenging each other, but then you have floor-wide competitions that the management team can put out. So there's just a different lot of options that you can put in there to drive home your focuses, but make it fun for the refs as well. So I think it's really great, and we've seen that Zizzo's kind of helped us out in that aspect of employee engagement and retention at this point.
Okay. Let's see here. Comments. We changed our starting hourly pay to 19 per hour from 14, and recruiting has drastically improved. Good. During our nesting period, we do contests within the new group. For example, higher number of payments collected for the day. Interesting idea. Let's see here. I think those are all the questions from the audience. So let's go back. And let's sort of turn our lens. We got a few minutes left. Let's turn our lens kind of forward and looking ahead. Do you see this changing, getting worse, getting better, staying the same? What's your expectations for, you know, hiring, attrition rates, you know, as we start to kind of look toward 2024 and beyond? Do any of you have any gut feelings, any predictions, anything you want to share?
You know, every year I say, I think this year is going to be better. Part of it's my personality. I have a tendency to be a bit of a Pollyanna. But I have just not seen any change. It continues to be a very difficult labor market. And I don't see any economic indicators that lead me to believe that that's going to change.
Yeah, as I watch some of the bigger guys that are out there, right, your ones that are doing the force to return to the office and stuff like that. So that's going to be an interesting it's going to be an interesting experiment to watch. Are they actually able to get their people back in the office, or are they not? And then, you know, I can understand why employees love the remote environment and love being able to have that flexibility. Because for me personally, I drive to the office. It's a 45 minute to hour plus, depending on what traffic is doing. So that's time back in my life when I'm working from home. I could choose to utilize that to getting more work done, or sometimes I utilize that to, you know, have more time with the family, walking the dog, whatever it is. It takes some of those stressors away. And, you know, I'm kind of on that fence of, I think it's going to just stay a very challenging market. We're going to have to continue to innovate and become creative, not only in our hiring practices, but our business strategies straight across the board, to make sure that we have the right talent in place. We're utilizing technology as much as we possibly can, and we're making the jobs smarter, because at the end of the day, I want people to be able to come in here and work at their peak efficiency and produce the most that they possibly can, and not necessarily concerned with that amount of hours that they put into it, right? I want, come in here, give me your best work, and then walk out of here success and making as much money as you possibly can. as the win for everyone.
Yeah, I think as long as that remote environment is available to everyone, I think it's just going to be a challenge continuously keep your people, because there's going to be someone that's going to offer higher wages or offer this extra that you can't do at this point in time. So just the availability of a lot more jobs that they're at the tip of their fingertips on the computer, I think that will always be a struggle for us now.
That is the one area that we're having success. As other companies close the door on remote opportunities, those employees are reaching back out to us and they're wanting to join us because we are remote and we don't see that changing.
So there's another question. How are you including or incorporating creativity into collection training remotely and in the office, having employees want to return on site or online the next day?
So we don't, creativity certainly, but more of it is fun. Fun is one of our core values. Our core values are very important to us, but we also bring fun into it because we like to laugh and we want to encourage our employees to laugh. And so we bring fun and lighthearted stories and interactions with our new hires so that they leave at the end of the day saying, you know, I really like it. You know, she was fun and I think I can learn a lot from her and I want to work at this company. So we want them to leave every day feeling like not only did they learn something, not only is this the beginning of a great career and a great company, but they had a little bit of fun and they can share that with their family.
Yeah, I think creativity comes with engagement. No one wants to sit in a classroom, well, let alone now a Zoom in front of their computer. You got to give them the opportunity to get engaged and have enjoyment and bring a smile to their face. Like I said, those are the key components to anyone retaining information. If you're just going to sit there and talk to them and without giving them the chance to talk or engage or have a little fun in their lives, it's going to be real hard to get that representative learn and actually apply that on the floor when they get the opportunity. So yeah, enjoyment, engagement, fun, they all go intertwined together.
You know, one of the things that we found is not only fun for our new hires, it's fun for us too, is the virtual scavenger hunt. So, you know, the first person that can bring a stapler and show it on the screen, and then we throw them a $5 gift card to the state store so they can buy state gear. That's really fun. Plus, it gets them up out of their chair, gets the blood pumping. And sometimes we ask for really fun things, like stapler's easy. How about a Christmas ornament in July? First one to bring me a Christmas ornament. That's fun. It costs very little to do, and people start laughing.
I think that's extremely important. Having a good time, getting to know the people that you're working with, laughing at work, extremely important. This is a stressful job, so at the end of the day, the more that we can have fun and enjoy ourselves, the better. And then since we are still working that hybrid schedule and having people in the office, try to maximize that time that they're here. So there's a point to coming to the office, and that's when you get FaceTime and you're having QAs and you're having important business items, but we're also celebrating birthdays and maybe we have a grill, we're grilling and doing a cookout or whatever it is, just trying to make, there's a reason why you come to the office more than just because you have to. And it's a productive time, but at the same time, it's got the fun components in it as well. So there's a reason why I come in the 2 days a week or whatever it is.
Excellent. Well, unfortunately, we're just about out of time. The hour's really kind of flown by, which I think is just a testament to how important and insightful the information's been. But we'll wrap this up the way we end all the webinars here at accountrecovery.net. And that's asking each of our panelists to share the most important takeaway from today's conversation. So if you're walking away with one thing, or if you want the audience to walk away with one thing, what do you want that one thing to be? James, we'll start with you.
I love Judy's idea with sending the candy and everything to the kids, and like including the grandkids and stuff like that, and children. I think that's extremely important, including families. Sometimes it's overlooked. Families sacrifice a lot of time that they don't have with their parent, their grandparent, whoever it is, because they're working, right? That's hours that they're devoted somewhere else. So finding those connections and bringing the family in, because I think it's important. You're proud of where you work, but your family is also proud of where you're working as well.
Excellent. Thank you. Judy?
Yeah, James, I like what you said about the EAP being available to all employees. That's something that we firmly believe in as well. And it has been very successful. Work is stressful. And we want to make sure that our employees and their family members all have access to our EAP. We just recently enhanced our EAP, and we doubled the amount of one-on-one counseling sessions our employees can have and their family members. And really, that was a recognition of, we know how stressful the world is right now. And you can't possibly do how hard this work is if you don't have a resource, a safety valve. And it's encouraging, James, that you're seeing the same thing.
Excellent, thank you. Tony?
I think the important thing to know is that you need something that separates you from everyone else. The job's going to be the same, most likely, wherever you go in our industry. So whether it's your engagement, it's your company culture, how you get that remote environment to feel part of the company, whether it's just you in your home, but you have 100 other people in an office somewhere else, that you have to separate yourself from the other company, whether it's through fund committees, it's the health and wellness, or you have other engagement platforms that you can use. Something that gets that remote hire to feel part of your company. If it's a care package you send to them alongside of their new equipment, which is some goodies and some snacks or some swag from the company, anything that you can do that sets you apart from your competitors, that's going to mean something to that new hire. It's not just another box and here's my goods to start the job and see you Monday. Something a little personal to them. That goes a long way. It may be a little extra for the company, but you'll get that return long term.
Excellent. Well, Judy, James, Tony, I want to thank each of you so much for being here. A ton of great information. The kudos are coming in from the chat, and I can't say anything more than they're saying. So an amazing job from the three of you today. Thank you so much for being here. Chris, I want to thank you and the team at Peak Revenue Learning one last time for sponsoring today's webinar. I appreciate that. PeakRevenueLearning.com is the website. Thank you to everyone who was here today. If you're watching us live, thank you. If you're watching a recording, always appreciate that as well. If you are live, we've got a webinar coming Monday. What to do with RPCs that aren't normally considered RPCs. I know that's a confusing topic, but what we're talking about are things like disputes, things like complaints. Those are technically right party contacts, and those are opportunities for you to engage with consumers, and you should be engaging. So what to do with these things, these as we grow in digital collections and as there's these new communication channels, how do you sort of make sure you're connecting with consumers and engaging with them whenever you get the chance? So it's an interesting conversation. We've got a great panel lined up. If there's a link in the chat to sign up, or you can go to accountrecovery.net and sign up. I also put a link in the chat for ArmTech. I'm going to do my plug for that coming January 17th to 19th in Nashville, the industry's only technology conference. We've got a great lineup of speakers, a ton of great sessions. We've got companies doing user groups. We've got almost a full exhibit hall. It's going to be an amazing event. www.armtech.live if you're looking for more information. So we hope to see you there in Nashville in January. Until then, have a great weekend, everybody. Thank you so much for being here, and we look forward to seeing everybody soon. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. We'll see you guys later. Thanks.